Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast. And this week, we're talking about cards that lead to the most spectacular moments and the craziest stories in all of Commander. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander, and we have a fun one this week. We are talking about some of my all-time favorite cards in Commander, but before we jump into that, we got a crew to introduce. Joining me today, we got Krim and Phil and Tomer. How's it going today, guys? Are you ready to talk about some spectacular Magic cards?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Heck yeah.
Great topic.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one because this is the whole reason I play Commander. Like, I don't really care about winning in Commander. I care about these moments and these stories, and these are just some of the cards that I want to see every time I play a game of Commander because that's what the format's all about to me. But before we get to the cards, a reminder that our show today is brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. And if you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use your curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/mtgoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. And our show is also brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards. And Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about Avatar, and our top comment comes from @ocurter17 that says, "Big wave from a 52-year-old mom of four. I love playing Magic with my kids. I played back in the old days, and my kids were brought up on World of Warcraft and role-playing. Now we play Magic as a regular family event, and I need all the pro tips I can get. P.S. I'm still not a grand. Love to see how many grands watch your episodes of podcasts and clashes." It's always awesome to hear about like families playing Magic together and so forth. So super, super, super cool.
And World of Warcraft, excellent taste.
Yeah, hopefully Frost Mage, but
Fire Mage.
Okay, Tomer, get out of here. We're not going to have this discussion right now.
We just have very opposite likes on it. Yeah.
I naturally would play the controlling PvP type, but my partner, her mom has been, I taught her Magic and whatnot, and she has been playing a lot. And
she's been going
out to her local store and she's just been playing with her friends. And it's so cool watching my partner's mom like just getting into the game and she's learning and she's like, wow, there's really a lot of cards. But it's like having the time of her life, just like, I don't know what your cards do. I believe you probably, but let's just play. So that's really nice to hear.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good example how Magic really is for everyone. It is so cool to see more and more stories of people that are not your like traditional 20-something nerd or whatever playing the game and just like how big the game has gotten. It's always fun to hear those stories. So
it's a good sign, yeah.
Oh, it is a good sign. Let's talk about cards that lead to crazy stories at the table. And let's start with you, Tomer. Give us a card that leads to great stories.
Okay, this is one of my favorite Commander cards. And I very much try to stick on theme with every single card when I build a deck and whatever. I try to go theme and synergy over everything. But this one, if I'm ever in Rakdos, I'm putting in Rakdos Charm.
I thought you meant Deadpool.
Oh, absolutely not. I would, theme, I would throw it in a river. So Rakdos Charm, though, is when I started playing Commander, which is like 2011. It's 2 mana, black and red, instant. It's a modal spell, as all charms are. So choose one. Option one is exile target player's graveyard. Option two, destroy target artifact. And option three, which is my favorite one and why I bring it up, each creature deals 1 damage to its controller. Now this card is still, I would say, very, very good, even all the way in 2025, soon to be 2026, because getting rid of a graveyard at instant speed, always nice. Blowing up an artifact at instant speed for 2 mana, still very nice. But then the third one is like the memory maker. It's like whenever your opponent has more creatures than they have life total, boom, Rakdos Charm, they're dead. I can't count the number of times. Well, I actually can't count the number of times that like somebody has like infinite army and stuff, and then somebody like top decks Arrakis Charm and wins off it. It just like feels it's such a great moment. Like I still remember to this day. For example, it's like 6 years ago at this point. Commander Clash, Tom MTG Radio. I don't remember the rest of the game, but I just remember he had an army like somebody an opponent had an infinite army or something ready to kill him. Zero cards in hand. Top deck Arrakis Charm wins, and they're like that sticks with me to this day. It's crazy. I love this card.
This was one of the first cards I thought of, too, when we talked about this topic. This one just leads to, like, such exciting, awesome moments. It gets everyone involved because it's hitting all your opponent's stuff. And it's, like, good enough as a, like, utility spell that it's okay to have in your deck. Like, the creature, like, spectacular mode is a little situational. Some games it's going to be, like, spectacular. Some games it's not great. But like you said, like, it gives some graveyard hate in the deck. You can blow up an artifact. Also, shout out to Villainous Wrath, which is a new addition to remind me of this, but it's kind of got the same, like, five mana. You blow up all the creatures, and target opponent loses, like, equal to the number of creatures they control before they get blown up.
That's so fun, too.
Right? Another one that, like, adds that kind of moment to the table.
Still remember the Crim Wrath.
I'm just scared of this. The Villainous Wrath is just evil. But Arrakis Charm is like, yeah, I should play it more, but then the only deck I play Arrakis in is like a artifact deck, and then just like, there's no synergies, but I think every game will have a board state where this is good. And my god, the time where it kills at instant speed for two mana.
Brutal. It does seem like a bad fill card because you're usually the one that's making the infinite board of tokens.
Oh,
and
yeah.
This is symmetrical.
Great card versus fill decks.
Yes, it is. The hard counter to fill.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep moving on. Crim, what do you got for us for a card that leads to great stories?
So do the stories have to be overwhelmingly happy or can they just be memorable?
We need a reaction. We just need a memorable reaction.
If people remember it, it's a story.
All publicity is good publicity, as they say.
Commandeer
Strip Mine is a horrible memory. And yet, it is a memory.
It is a memory.
Okay, then.
Memorable.
In that case, I'm going to bring up one of my favorite cards since always, Spell Shock. Two in a red. It's an enchantment. Whenever any player successfully casts a spell, Spell Shock deals 2 damage to him or her.
Stacks.
This spell is so fun, and I cannot tell you. I have had so many fun games with this where everyone's like, "Wait, I think I'm gonna die soon."
There's no exceptions.
Monster.
Usually these are like Eidolon, where it's you cast like something 3 or less, or you cast a non-creature spell, but this is just it doesn't care. No matter what you cast, you gotta take the 2.
Yeah,
every play.
It's equally fair. God. And it's because the way I play it isn't like I'm gonna lock you out of the game. No, I've died to my own Spell Shock tons of times. Like it's just like I'm like, why not? Right? This is where I truly turn Commander into Mario Party, right? Like it's just like, oh baby, yeah, we're doing it. The game is gonna end.
What deck do you play it in? Do you have a specific deck or just randomly?
Lord of Pain is the number one deck that I have. That one's actually where it's useful. But like, I do have my mono red deck that I just put this in here why not? Right? I put this Sulfuric Vortex, and every turn we're just gonna take some damage for fun. And every time, I always die first. I don't think I've ever actually won a game with any deck that has Spell Shock has never ended well for me. I have always died first.
I mean, you gotta get killed. Yeah,
such a good group slugger.
It's Lagerroth just fun.
Salivates on this one.
But like Group Slug is such a fun, memorable time because the games do come to an end one way or the other, right? And like the whole table now has to work on beating you while you're kind of like also beating on yourself. And I love this
it's
card.
It's fair.
I do like cards that like involve the entire table because I think it keeps people engaged. It makes the whole experience fun. I don't know if Spell Shock is exactly the direction I would go with those style of cards, but I can see from Crim's perspective, where you're coming from.
You've got 40 life. You know what? What's
that's
the
only
big
20
deal?
Spells. That's only 20 yeah. spells.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, my argument falls apart. But hey, irrelevant because it's only 40. You got 40 life. What do you? Who cares? You know.
The Crim life. Ah, good choice, Crim. Good choice. Phil, what do you got for us?
Okay, so this card it involves the entire table in a I think good way. So first of all, I would mention all the initiative and monarch cards. So everything that introduces an incentive to beat each other up. But this one, this one, it drives the whole table crazy. It is coveted jewel, 6 mana. I'm just going to read it, although we all know what it does. Yeah. It enters, draw 3 cards, taps for 3 mana, and then whenever one or more creatures in opponent's control attack you and are not blocked, so Birds of Paradise gets this too, that player draws 3 cards, gains control of targeted jewel, coveted jewel, and untaps it. So we have had multiple games where the objective turned into get the jewel instead of do any reasonable attacks. Yeah. It just becomes an extra game to get the jewel, and then it ramps and it draws cards, so it accelerates the game. It's just such a fun card. It introduces like a side quest that you just... There's like in some role-play games, you just do side quests because they're more fun, and this one's certainly more fun than attacking for just damage. You could draw cards and just beat up the person who was greedy the turn before, and then... Ah, it's such a cool card. I mean, if you can sacrifice it, it's actually a good card.
Oh, boo.
You, like, copy it, sacrifice it.
Party foul.
Gets it.
That's a party foul.
Play it in Mishra if you want to play it good. But otherwise, it's just fun. It's just super monarch. Yeah.
There's very few cards in Commander that I would be happy if they showed up every single game of Commander I played. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those cards. This can show up every single game of Commander, and I'm going to enjoy that game a little bit more because Coveted Jewel showed up.
I love that point in the game when Coveted Jewel, everyone's like punched each other into the ground and they've drawn so many cards, and then you realize, oh God, I don't want to attack you because then the person after me wants
to attack me. Oh, the next one attacks me.
You get hit with the Voltron.
And there's wheeling and dealing. Yeah, I like this card. So it gets everybody involved. I used to be one of those party foul people where like, I like the card, but I'm only going to play it if I can like sacrifice it on demand and stuff. But I think it was like Richard who like really was like pushing like, no, you can just play it and it will be fun
just
for
get
the
it
table.
Back with the birds.
Yeah, I get back. Yeah. But I think it's just like, it's fun. Like you don't have to build around it. You can just throw it in and it just makes the games more exciting and fun for the table. And I mean, more cards, more mana.
And at least it's not just like group hug either because of how like all the politics of it passing around. It's so fun.
Life
love that
totals
card.
Must go down.
Yeah. And it makes the game end. That's
you
the
don't
upside
need
of Monarch.
To hit them. You can hit with a Birds of Paradise or Ornithopter. Just need to be unblocked.
And then you end up in like the deal making, like, oh, we need to draw something to deal with this person. So can I hit you so I can draw with the coveted jewel? Because I might draw a wrath. And it like, oh, it's so good. It's so good. But yeah, great choice. Well, all right, let's move on to my first pick. And this one, I think Tomer, last season on Commander Clash, pulled off a pretty epic win with Prisoner's Dilemma. Prisoner's Dilemma is a 5-mana sorcery. Says each opponent secretly chooses silence or snitch, and then the choices are revealed. If each opponent chooses silence, it deals 4 damage to them. If each opponent chooses snitch, it deals 8 damage to each of them. Otherwise, it deals 12 damage to each opponent who chooses silence, and then you can flash it back for 7 mana. So it is literally the Prisoner's Dilemma on a Magic card, and I love subgame cards. This is like a little mini game that's taking place inside of a game of Commander, and it's relatively powerful. Like, 4 damage is not a ton, but if you end up taking 12 damage, that can be enough to end the game. I think, Tomer, when you won with it, you copied a few times, which made it much harder to make the choices because it actually did become a position where if you choose wrong, you end up losing the game. And I just think those like subgame cards are so cool and so much fun. And this one gets everyone involved. I guess the person cast it doesn't really get involved with the Prisoner's Dilemma itself. They're the jailer or whatever. But but still, like, it gets the whole
They're
table
the
involved.
Guy.
So I love this card too. So what do you guys think of Prisoner's Dilemma? Is this card any good or is it just like a funny meme card?
Well, if you copy it a ton of times.
Yeah.
I mean, it's It's pretty good, but if
I'm
firing
easier way to
this,
win the game.
If you fire it off as just a one-off, it's still really fun, but I don't know if it's good. It's just really fun.
It is fun, yeah.
Like, peak fun, so much fun, they gave it flashbacks, so you could have the fun again, right? But, like, this is a sweet card, but at 5 mana, that's a lot of mana. But I like it. I play this card. It's such a meme card.
Yeah.
It's kind of sad that it doesn't draw a card or something. Like, if it just deals damage, so in some board states, it's just whatever. If you would gain some value from this, otherwise you would need to play it indexed to gain value from damage. But that's kind of always the problem with burn and life gain spells. Yeah. But it is always fun.
But then the more you add on, Phil, the better of a card it becomes. Then it just becomes a generically good card, right?
I think it's the part of the fun of it is it doesn't show up that often because it is not the most optimal thing to do. And then when it does show up, it's special, I think. Like, if every single, like if you want it to be optimized, you just replace this with, like, Crackle of Power or something in red, and it'll kill people a lot faster. But, you know, the fact that it's not that as powerful means that, like, so you make a conscious choice to include it, and then every once in a while, you there's, like, a red player who shows up with it, and that's kind of cool. I like it.
The real question, are you guys snitches? Are you snitches, or do you stay silent?
I never. Oh, I would have
silent always.
With you.
I remember getting wrecked by this, because I was the one who would choose silence and never snitch, and then y'all were snitching on me, and I died, so I still remember.
And,
apparently
and
it was a memorable
is,
moment,
because
I'm still
game.
Complaining about it now, 6 months later,
And the funny thing is if you all just, like, chose, like, correctly, all of you would have lived.
Yeah.
Even though it was, like, four copies or something. Yeah, it was funny.
Oh,
so good.
Let's keep moving on. Tomer, back to you. What do you got for us?
All right. I'm going back to one of my favorite commander cards. I only have it in a single deck because I don't run this color combination that much, but oh gosh, I wish I could run it more often. It is Ink Shield. Ink Shield, 5 mana instant or Orzhov. Prevent all combat damage that will be dealt to you this turn. For each 1 damage prevented this way, create a 2/1 white and black Inkling creature token with flying. This card, I know there's not a lot of believers here. I know Krim is with me, but I don't think
a good card. I don't Seth understand is, what why is yeah. What is what's
this
going
is
this
like, it's a great, like, fog. It's the type of card you wanted in the late game when everybody start, you know, like, you know, turn 8 plus, when everybody starts having, like, a lethal board state and you're afraid that you're going to die at any given time, you hold up that 5 mana, somebody swings at you for, like, not even lethal. They could just swing at you for, like, 5 damage, 1 creature usually, and you get, not only do you nullify the damage, but on top of that, you get 10 power of flying creatures onto the battlefield, and then suddenly your opponents now have to deal with your instant army in a can before it's your turn, or else you're going to kill them, which I really like. And that's, like, the low end, too. Like, if somebody if you prevent 10 damage, if you prevent, like, 10 damage.
What's lower?
Oh, my God, it's 20.
I don't understand. What are you getting at, Phil?
That's why we've never seen it. It just doesn't happen.
Because it's Orzhov. It's so
it's
hard.
It's
so hard to play it.
Like, honestly, I think that if we just had Orzhov every game, Tomer and I at least will have this in our deck.
That's true.
Yeah, we've always
that
been talking
be
about how good this is, but we just never get to put Ink Shield in a deck. That's the problem.
Was
yeah,
it so
it's this kind season, of the same with the Reckless
this season,
Child, yeah.
I'm going to get you an Ink Shield. This is it. I'm going to force Orzhov every single deck.
I played it in the commands.
I was going to say, didn't you build a Rule Zero deck where you played in? That is got to be
the worst idea
I've ever heard. Yeah.
I mean, obviously, that just disincentivizes
and tell people about it. Yeah.
Or maybe it's brilliant because then no one ever attacks you. You're just guaranteed
that
no one will
it's
ever
like
attack you if you leave your mana up.
No, it just means they have to hold up a counter spell when they attack you or something and they want to kill you. Like, ugh.
So I think
maybe do you just it's holding up 5 mana. If they hold up a counter spell, it's if you don't attack in 2/5. I guess
that's
why you
don't show them the Ink Shield.
So the thing is it's not on my list, but similar cards are like Cellular Wreckage and Aetherize that are just super situational and insane blowouts. And if people attack, they're like, oh, please don't tell me you have this. Ink Shield might just be the problem that it's 2 colors. If it was mono white, I do play a lot of white, so maybe I would play it there. It creates tokens. It triggers the talent. It sucks that it's just prevent all damage that would be dead, so it's not just combat damage.
No, it is. It is all combat damage. Prevent all combat damage. Yeah,
it's a fog. Oh, it's combat damage.
It is combat damage.
Why
yeah.
no? Why no? Life what? Total can change. Like a power prep so version of this. Yes.
No, it's already so good. Come on.
There's also like the spider fog one. Not as good as Ancient Shield, because Ancient Shield is equal to the damage you take, so it makes way more tokens. But Arachnogenesis does it equal to the number of things attacking you. I think there's an elf one they printed in like Lord of the Rings Commander that does something like that. Comeuppance is kind of one of those reversal effects. But I'm curious. Do you guys think just fogs in general qualify as these moment-making story cards? Because I feel like 2 or 3 years ago, I remember having some really big fog moments where we were just like playing a game and Richard by surprise or someone by surprise would have the fog and it was a pretty big moment. But then I think they became part of our meta. And then I kind of expect it. Like if someone has one man up and they're getting attacked for lethal, I don't know if it's exciting anymore when we play them all the time because I just assume that they have the darkness or assume that they have like the fog. But do you think just like fogs in general qualify as these like moment making cards?
I think they do because you still have to play around them, right? Like you could say what you want and think whatever, but like you got to figure out how to do it so that you force the person to use it, right? Because like that game, I think when I played Azula, I didn't even have darkness in the deck. Like
this is again like Krim's politics is like at S tier level. We're all playing at like B tier because like I had a fog in my deck, but then Krim just managed to manipulate Seth so much with like the reverse psychology that he was so terrible, he killed the other two people before he even dared attack Krim. Krim had nothing. He implanted the thought into his brain.
It worked. Because I was convinced you had the fog or the head of the fog. You had the darkness. I really thought you
mentioned,
did.
He like mentioned. He's like, oh, he like insinuated.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't like Seth actually. Put that into his own head, and then I didn't even think about it because I had a one drop like that was blue with flash, and Seth just made that darkness appear.
You were just like, "Wait, tell me when you go to combat." And I was like, and then he's like, "Oh no, it's darkness!
Wait a minute. Oh no. I got to kill Tomer and Phil, and then he won't fog me."
I was like, "What?"
Tomer,
I guess. So some folks, the funny folks, like darkness is pretty fun, but then it. Can shift into anticlimactic if it's like Teferi's protection honestly Flare of Fortitude, even though I like this card. But this one's like, yeah, you got it.
I think it's
but
like
the fogs that are like that only fog, and maybe Ink Shield is the best one of this because it's so much. It costs so much. Like darkness costs one mana, but at least it only fogs. If it also protects your board, and you would play it anyways, but it also just saves you in this moment.
I think by definition, the memorable cards have to be like fairly uncommon or rare to happen. Because if you start seeing them in every single deck, they don't start becoming memorable. It just feels like normal. Yeah.
Yep. I would agree with
Although
that.
Although there are exceptions. I like Chaos Swap, for example. It's like played.
That's true. Yeah, I guess that is. Yeah, Ink Shield, I think it will be a memorable card once Tomer finally casts it. Yeah.
Well, I'm waiting.
Or Krim, one of you guys.
Orzhov every single
how do I force Orzhov without it just being an aristocrat?
It's like I try to pull off Sea Time and it just... The opponent will just not play a blue spell if you have.
But when it happens, it'll be memorable.
It's not so good.
That's a good one too, by the way.
Well, speaking of memorable, Krim, we're back to you. Why don't you give us another memorable card?
Well, if you want to talk about like fogs, right, and you want to talk about them not, you know, being memorable, but because like it protects your board, and that's too easy. Okay, yes, but what if I offer you Perch Protection? Which is a 4/white instant gift, an extra turn. You create 4/2/2 birds with flying, and if the gift was promised, all permanents you control phase out until your next turn. Your life total can't change, yada, yada, yada. Exile Perch Protection. Is this one, this is exciting, right, Phil? I know we talked about, like, you know, like, okay, Clever Concealment, all that. All those cards kind of just blank your stuff out, and then it's, like, wild. But The beauty of this one, and I, and boy, do I love it, it's to gift an extra turn to somebody who's like right after you, or just politic it to where it's like, hey, I'm going to give this person an extra turn. Y'all do whatever you want to do to stop them, but I'm out and I'll see you later. Yeah. You deal with them. This card is six mana, though.
This is like the
six
most
mana.
Crim
it would
card.
Be insane, though. It would be insane in anything under six. Like, it plays so much better than it reads. That I thinking of putting it into my Brewing Chef Commander Rule Zero deck because it makes tokens. Mm-hmm. It's just so good to usually with like what's the Secret Rendezvous or something. You want to target somebody that's super far behind. With this one, it might sometimes be the best play to give the absolute problem.
Yes,
just an extra turn. So kill the rest of the table. You can't kill me.
And then.
To eke it out after but this.
It reads so badly, and I've had these conversations with people for a while. I remember, like, I don't remember when it was, but like we had a podcast or something where I was like trying to passionately defend it, or a video I did on it. I don't know. People complained that I spiked the card. I didn't, by the way, and it's back down. So you stop rustling your jimmies for a second. But the card, it looks like it's bad. It looks like it's a bad card. Six mana. Give your opponent a turn. Are you crazy? But yeah, the whole point is that either you make somebody a problem so you completely deflect and you peace out and the other two people have to deal with it, or somebody's a problem and you're like, hey, I'm going to give you an extra turn. You deal with it. I'm not going to die, but like now they have a fighting chance to have more resources to deal with the problem. It's so easy to get an advantage out of it. I've seen also, it was played against me multiple times in Vegas this year. I think it was like three times. And each time I lost to it. There was one time when your partner, Krim, was actually in that game. And the person who played Purse Protection also like politicked it in a way that I died from it. and then that person actually won off it, which was very cool to see. So I love this card. And I still remember that game from Vegas.
Yeah, it's memorable. Memorable. Yeah. And I mean, like, 4/2/2 birds is a lot of power. I think the card's actually just like kind of good.
You
I think
just
you
cast
can
and kill people.
Yeah.
It didn't even have to give me the birds, to be honest with you. I just want to give someone an extra turn and not be there to deal with it. Right?
Have to deal with the consequences
it's
of your
power
choice.
Power flying at instant speed. I mean, it's not nothing.
It's definitely nothing to like ignore, but it is the ideal situation. Oh. I want to give somebody this turn. Mm-hmm. So
yes.
This
anybody
is
ever seen this
why.
Without the turn? Just a instant speed for 2/2.
I honestly didn't realize that was an option. Like, I know it is, but it feels like it's not an option. It feels like if you're playing this, you have to give him the turn, right? Like,
I mean, I just threw this in my want list because now I really want to put it into the Brewer deck.
Yeah.
But, like, if these tokens get buffed or something, that seems...
Triggers Caretaker's Talent.
Instant... Oh,
draw one more card on your way out.
Well, that's
I wish there was an extended foil. Like there's an extended, but man, this artwork would look crazy in foil.
So then nobody can
complain.
No,
I want
the
same artwork.
Tomer, did you spike
it? I mean, it's not
card?
Too expensive.
Tomer, why'd you spike it?
Why would you spike
this? I only have one copy. I probably need
I wanted
to
copy
one at the very least.
But then I didn't have enough money because Tomer spiked it on me.
Yeah, confirmed spike. Tomer's a spike also.
Don't
I was
worry,
at
Seth,
the
I
local
have a
game
stack
store.
Of 50 behind me. I'm going to give. I'll send you one for $10.
Oh,
okay,
thank you. Now we're good.
You get the goldfish discount.
That's a price. All right, Phil, back to you.
All right. I mean, you got to do this. This one is not like the other ones were a little group hug. I guess not. They weren't even group huggy. This one's just for me. It's just a card that I really happily play, but another one of those that I really want to get power crept. It is Mirror March. Six mana enchantment. Whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, flip a coin until you lose a flip. For each flip you've won, create a token that's a copy of that creature. Those tokens gain haste. Exile then at the beginning of the next end step. So ways to power creep this would be please don't cost six mana. Also make the creatures sacrifice, not exile. Also make them non-legendary, whatever. I still play it in my, I think, Maelstrom Wanderer deck because it's just so fun. Like, once you resolve this, each creature could be the end of the game. You could just win infinite flips. You won't, although I do have one coin that is notoriously rigged.
Cheater coin.
I remember that in Vegas.
You just kept flipping.
Dude, but then wait, hold on. Like when I say the other side comes up, the other side goes, oh, it's just rigged in my favor. So
that's
be
weird.
Scared
I must
if I get
have
the pirate the, coin.
The brother the of one, that coin know? Where it's it's
games,
rigged for
yeah.
sure.
Oh,
where
yeah.
every time this is a 6-mana enchantment that just hits and I get the opposite of what I call and it's just
I have
cool.
had this happen, oh.
yeah. This is one of the cards that I associate like early from Brewer's Kitchen, like Phil. Like I think I don't know if it was first you did it on Clash or you first did it as a Brewer's Kitchen video, but I know you did
both.
Oh,
yeah, I did
a
video
lot.
Where,
yeah.
It's nowadays, it is kind of scary because people know that, like, technically, he's very scary now. Yeah. And then it's 6-mana, do nothing. I want it on a commander, just either team or colors or something that has this text box as a commander for like 4-mana and then. Ooh, something that can play Risen Reef. So with Risen Reef, this actually, you don't need to luck out too hard to draw your entire deck or like put your entire deck in your hand and battlefield.
Right, yeah.
Because
they
all stack
trigger
up
each other.
Same with, and this one's kind of scary. It's Terror of the Peaks kills instantly once you win two flips or something. I just wish it was a little power crept. Don't overdo it, Watsy. Although this is coin flipping.
Yeah, there's still luck involved, right? Yeah, it's still a luck card. I think
how hard you have to power creep this to make it into like a standard deck where it's just worth playing.
It'd have
this
to be like 2-mana or something. Yeah.
So I think it's fine. Just give it a little push. Very cool artwork. Shout out Johannes Voss.
Working with Legends would be huge. Like, I think if they printed this today for the first time, it would have the, like, exclusion that you could copy your Legends, especially since you got to sack them anyway, right? It's not like you can build a big board of them forever. So I think that'd be fine. I feel like coin flipping is inherently one of those mechanics that leads to those moments. Like, outside of Mana Crypt, which is pretty boring coin flipping, but, like, Invert Polarity leads to pretty good moments. Rakdos the Showstopper, it's, like, flip coins to see what survives. Like, even Boom Pile, when I think of Richard, I think of, like, some pretty epic games that, like, come down to the flip of a coin of a Boom Pile, whether, like, we're all going to survive or the game's going to end on the spot. Yeah. So I think coin flipping just tends to be, and I'll never forget Krim, talking about his bad luck with Miramar.
The Omniscience.
With Usury or whatever. We're winning 5 in a row. Like, just in the blind, 5 in a row. Oh, I have an Omniscience now and drew a bunch of cards. Like, you did it twice. Did you win a game? It was
on that trade. He had to rig the client somehow to do it. I don't even know.
Yeah, it wasn't even the pirate coin.
I think coin flips are very memorable always if you just leave out Kruxthorn. As soon as you put Kruxthorn in,
party foul.
Yeah, party foul.
Definitely party foul.
Same with dice rolling and random cards.
Yeah.
Like everything random.
Rolls. Yeah.
Sometimes Cascade, but if you really build around Cascade, it should be fine. Unless you're me on Clash, which somehow doesn't work.
Yeah, you're always going to hit the X spell somehow. All right, let's keep moving on. Next up for me, I have one of my favorites. One of my favorite versions of this effect is cards that make your opponent make a choice. And depending on what they choose, they either end up fine or end up dying, maybe. And that card for me, the first one I think of is Combustible Gearhulk. Six first striker. When it enters, target opponent can have you draw 3 cards, or if they don't, you mill 3 cards, and they have to take damage equal to the combined mana value of those cards. So especially if you're playing a deck with a bunch of big things in it, it leads to this really exciting moment where your opponent has to make this decision of, okay, do I let them draw 3 cards? Do I mill it? How expensive is their deck? How much damage can I take? How much life total am I at? And it leads to this really exciting, like, moment at the table where your opponent has to decide what to do. And I just think it's a really, really fun effect. And it's not, like, overpowered. I guess you can blink it and try to get more triggers out of it. It's artifacts. You can have some artifact synergies. But even just playing it fairly leads to really fun moments. Another card that's similar, I shouted out, is Palantir of Ornthank. Although that one gets much more boring once people, like... if people always had to do it, but eventually the choice is gone, right? Because the way it works, it's a 3-mana artifact to be near end step. You put an influence counter on it and scry 2. Then target opponent can have you draw a card. If they don't, then they mill equal to the number of counters on it and take damage equal to the total mana value, or lose life equal to the total mana value of the milled cards. But the problem with Palantir is it's like a choice maybe the first turn or two, and even then it's almost not, because people have just figured out, like, typically you always mill them the first time, maybe the second time, and then you always let them draw third, fourth, fifth time. So it reads like a card that would lead to exciting moments, but now that people have played with it for a while, it doesn't always lead to those moments, because it's kind of just like doing the same thing every time. But Combustible Gearhulk, I think, is one of my favorite. Like, it's kind of a chaos card, but not in the way that Tomer hates, where it's like actually messing with the table, but it's Control leading chaos. This kind of chaotic moment. But what do you guys think about Combustible Gearhulk?
I find it, yeah, still a good one. It's still fun. So much fun. It has so many fun moments inside games. It's still to this day, I actually am very happy that I have my masterpiece of this. I still use this card.
Ooh. Did you open it or did you buy it?
Yeah. I opened that one.
Nice.
At the time, when I opened it in Kaladesh, it was not the sickest. But, like, you know.
Yep, could have been better.
Yeah, it could have been a lot better for any masterpiece. But over time, as Commander became popular, I was very happy about my Combustible Gearhulk. And it's, even if it's been reprinted in the ground, there's just too many fun moments.
Yeah. It's a fun one.
Yeah. I love all the stuff that's like, you know, people reveal stuff from the top of the library and then people get hurt, and it's just like there's like one the Krim I associate with Krim a lot. It's on his list, but we'll get to it. I think
very nice. Yeah, actually, Krim, we'll reverse the order this time. Tell me, you can go after Krim. Krim, what is your similar card since we're talking about this effect?
Okay, it's a newer card from the Spider-Man set, and you know, it's the Parker Luck, baby. All right, you got the Parker Luck, and for those that don't know what the Parker Luck is, this card is a 3-mana enchantment, and I'm gonna read the exact wording here, because you pretty much reveal both cards off your deck, but at the beginning of your end step, two target players each reveal the top card of their library. They each lose life equal to the mana value of the card revealed by the other player. Then they each put those cards into their hand. So the shortened version is that you choose two people who will reveal the top cards of their deck. They will lose the life of the revealed card of the other player and then put it in the hand. This is so much fun because you don't have to always target yourself. You can have it so two other people do it. Of course, if you saw me try to play Keen Duelist as a commander all of last season, I always target myself for the most part, and I always get punished. But it is so much fun playing this card in Keen Duelist style effects, just because, I don't know, everybody draws cards, and it's the randomness of how much life we choose. And of course, the one time I just choose to keep leaning in on Phil, he just keeps revealing Aatrox every time.
And, you know, he likes his value. Yeah, I mean, what are you... Why are you
I played a reanimator deck, so...
it was a reanimator deck. We're not playing this game to be scared,
nothing
you know?
But
so you gotta take the 8 to the dome, but it's led to so many silly moments across the pod. Whether it's just two people just getting group slugged out of the game by my own, like, you know, by my own spell, or you know, me just removing myself from the game randomly with it.
And I also like that it does draw the people cards too, because then there's like this like tension between, do I want to try and do I want to be picked? You know, like maybe sometimes I'm desperate for card draw. I'm willing to take greatness at any cost. You know, I'm willing to take Dark Confidant to the face. But like, also sometimes when you're at low life, you know, or when you're in when you're in the single digits, that it starts becoming like a very sweaty, like you start sweating a little bit. It gets a little bit tense. And I really like how it does both, you know, like you can use it politically. You can also use it to kill people. And there's a little element of randomness, unless you're doing like top deck manipulation. But like for the most part, you don't have to do that. Yeah.
Although I mean, also you could.
It would make it a planet.
On a small tangent though, there's one card that I forgot the name, so I couldn't bring it up when you brought a Combustible Gearhulk. But there's one card that I feel is adjacent to it, and I've had so much fun playing it, and I just keep forgetting because it's Doctor Who, and Doctor Who is a void in my intelligence for some reason. I don't know. Yeah, the Doctor Who card just doctor, like, something. They keep showing up and disappearing in my brain for some reason. Ensnared by the Mara.
Oh, yeah.
It's a 4-mana red sorcery. Each opponent faces a villain's choice. They exile cards from the top of the library until they exile a non-land card. Then you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Or they choose to exile, the player exiles the top 4 cards of their library, and then Ensnared by the Mara deals damage equal to the total mana value of those exile cards to that player. So it's not tied to a big old creature like the Gearhulk, but you're potentially casting 3 spells, one for each opponent, or they're all taking possibly a lot of damage, and I really like it. And also you're taking from your opponent's stuff too. You're not even getting your own library, so it's even more random in a way I like.
Oh, it's so cool. I'm pretty sure
this one got us.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I played it when we did our Doctor Who clash with the Valeyard and managed to like have some other card that copied it a couple times, and I'm pretty sure it ended up winning me that game. So yeah, I remember that one too. It is a really fun one. Well, Tomer, I think technically it's kind of your pick now since we went out of order.
But, oh yeah, I got 2 in a row.
Yeah, 2 and double up.
Wow. All right. This one is one that I initially put in for a very specific deck, and then I was just like, no, it's going into all my blue decks because it's very funny. Domineering Will. Domineering Will, it's a 4-mana blue instant that says target player gains control of up to 3 target non-attacking creatures until end of turn. Untap those creatures. They block this turn if able. So this is a very flexible card. So the Galaxy Brain thing, the Galaxy Brain. So the lowest one is like, this is a fog, right? You are being attacked. You steal 3 non-attacking creatures. Suddenly they are blockers. And maybe you kill some creatures on the way. The blockers might die. The attackers might die. It's all win-win. You love it. Then the second level of the Galaxy Brain is, what if my opponents are being attacked and I want some creatures to die? I will gift them blockers. The blockers need to block, so they die. It's great. And then the final level, the Ultra Galaxy Brain, is this is a triple threat in effect. If you have a haste enabler on the battlefield, it doesn't give the creatures haste, but if you have a haste enabler on the battlefield, you can steal it. Then they have haste, and you move to combat, and you swing with 3 creatures for 4 mana.
Jeez.
Didn't you hose somebody this past season with this card?
I think it was Drownu. I think I gave somebody Drownu and they died with the blockers.
That sounds right, yeah.
But this card is like, it's a very silly card.
I have never played this, but I think you have me convinced that I should play it because it does look like it's super fun and all those shenanigans sound really cool. And it kind of seems like it might actually be kind of good, too, like as mono blue removal or something, because blue is not the best removal color. So being able to get rid of 3 problematic things in like a funny way actually might make it a powerful card.
This is similar to a rain cell, right?
It's very early commander.
This is like a early pre-con card, right? If I remember correctly, this was the Thraxamundar deck?
So, yeah. Or was it Commander 2014. Yeah. So, yeah, it was the Thraxamundar deck.
Oh, go to a sack outlets too, by the way. You can like just steal a creature and sack it. But it's not as
I guess Reigns of Power is a little it's just more ceiling and then less floor. I don't know. So Reigns of Power just straight up untaps and flips all the like yours and somebody's creatures, which also works with Sacrifice Outlet. This one works in combat though, right? I mean, both of them are just, I think, very good. Even the wrong turn or whatever, where you give somebody, like everything that changes control of creatures leads to great situations. But also, if you play it correctly or in the right situation, they're all blowouts.
Yeah. Yeah, you can just jam them in any deck and they're going to be funny and lead to big moments. Or you can build around them and then they become like kind of devastating. I play Reigns of Power in my Flibblethip deck and it's actually very good. I've won some games with it just by like trading my bad board of Flibblethip creatures for someone's good board of like powerful creatures. And
Reigns give haste.
It's blue insurrection, basically. But that's the speed.
Especially if you don't build a big board. But yeah. Well, Phil, I think we're back around to you. What do you got for us?
All right, this one, man, I'm just saying cards that I like, but this one led to, so the one of the most memorable moments is in the first Vegas, somebody played a deck that could deal like an astronomical amount of damage. And the way they did it is with Astral Dragon. So it's a, nowadays it's so expensive, but back then it was cheap. And luckily when I get my copies, it was cheap. It's a 8-mana 4/4 flying. When it enters, create 2 tokens that are copies of target non-creature permanent on the battlefield, except they are 3/3 dragon tokens. And they have flying. So if you copy like a damage tripler with this, it gets nuzzy. The thing that I'm trying to say is they are kind of like Machine God's Effigy, where they always lead to crazy situations that you can't really prepare for. Like your own deck should have something cool to copy. But it does copy non-creature things. So it could be anything. I don't know. It just always leads to crazy situations. And yeah, it can get out of hand if you copy anything that doubles or triples. Oh my God.
Yeah, this is another one where it's like, it's a card that you can build around, right? Because there's a bunch of combos for this card. So you can, yeah, you can build your deck in a way that's trying to use this as your finisher. But you can also just play it super fairly and just be like, I'm a blue deck and I'm going to play it, as Phil was saying, where I'm copying things on the battlefield. And then it does lead to just some really wonky situations. I was playing this also going back to that Flibble Flip deck. We're talking about all the cards in my Flibble Flip deck today, but it's in my Flibble Flip deck with no combos, just because it's a cool, like, big dragon with an enters trigger for Panharmonicons. And there have been games where I've accidentally comboed with something from my opponent's deck, where I just play this and they have the right thing on the battlefield. It's like, oh, I guess I actually go infinite because of something you played. So it does lead to some really, especially if you don't build around it, it leads to some really, really like funny and unique moments that you just won't see with any other card.
Super flashy. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, very flashy. Well, speaking of flashy, actually, I guess this isn't flashy, but next up for me, I got kind of 2 cards, I guess, because they're kind of very similar. And those cards are Wand of Wonder and also Chaos Wand. So Chaos Wand was the original, and then they gave the better version in the future, the Commander version. But Chaos Wand, it is a 3-mana artifact that says you can pay 4 and tap it, and target opponent exiles cards from the top of their library until they exile instant or sorcery card. You can cast that card without paying its mana cost. You put the exiled cards that weren't cast to the bottom of the library in the random order. Wand of Wonder, it's the same thing, but it's got some dice rolling involved in it. It's a 4-mana red artifact. You pay 4, roll a d20. Each opponent exiles cards from the top of their library till they hit an instant or sorcery. And then you can cast up to X of those cards, where X is 1 if you rolled 1 to 9, 2 if you rolled 10 to 19. In 20, you get to cast all 3 of your opponent's cards. So Wand of Wonder makes whiffing a little bit harder, which actually in some ways I think makes it less exciting, because a lot of what I like of Chaos Wand is this huge risk moment where when you activate this, you have to try to choose the person who you think has like the best hits in their deck. So you already got a little subgame going on there. But when you activate this, you could be hitting some ultimatum or something that is just game ending, or like a wrath that the table desperately needs. A painful truth.
Yes, yeah. Or you can hit a painful my favorite truth thing that
does literally horribly. Yeah.
And that's the moment we're still talking about, the painful truth off the Chaos Wand. The other moment I can think of with this card from Commander Clash, and I can't remember who it was, but someone used it to spin into a counter spell and like hit some key spell on the stack with the Chaos Wand. And those are just like such amazing moments. Like that was years ago.
Monster.
Was it me
monster
that did it?
I was playing Asperia and I had this I accidentally attacked into Krim, and he like, we had like a 5-minute debate on whether or not I'm playing badly or I actually have a combat trick in my hand. And so like eventually he's like, I'm gonna block. I need to block. I believe you made a mistake. And then I had the combat trick, and then Seth just spun into like Chaos Wanted, spun it into the counterspell. And I was like begging him, don't, please, we have to deal with Trim. He's like, but it's so funny. I hit the counterspell. Like, this is perfect. I had it. And he countered me and I died, of course, obviously. But yeah.
See,
I still remember that.
I think that was Moto era Commander Clash too.
I don't have any grudges. Thank you for reminding me.
Is the history of Commander Clash me just blowing out Tomer in increasingly brutal ways? But yes, it leads to moments like that, which Tomer described absolutely perfectly there. But
just like that,
you could do with Chaos Wand. Yeah. All right, let's go once around, do a little mini round here. Not a full-on speed round, but we have about 10-15 minutes left. So let's go one more time around, starting with Tomer.
Okay, this one I'm kind of sad that Phil's not on the Clash crew anymore as a regular. He comes as a guest pretty often, though, because this card I started jamming in all my, like, when I was big on red and Phil and Seth were on at the table all the time. I started putting this in all my red decks, and I still haven't gotten anybody with it yet because I haven't seen it. But soon, don't worry, soon. Rune Flare Trap. It's a 6-mana instant red trap. But if it says, if an opponent drew 3 or more cards this turn, you may pay 1 red mana rather than paying the 6 red mana. And then it deals damage to target player equal to the number of cards in that player's hand. So both Seth, like, I like drawing cards. Who doesn't? Oh. But, like, mm-hmm. I think Seth and, like, Phil are so addicted to it, especially Seth, I would say,
yes.
That they always have, like, at least, like, 15 cards or something in a given hand. And, oh, my God, one day I'm going to get that Rune Flare Trap in my hand. You're going to Seagate Restoration, draw 30 or whatever. Rune Flare Trap's waiting. Rune Flare Trap. Then I'm going to copy it maybe once, and that'll be it. And I'm so excited.
I have nightmares.
Right
about
after the initiate.
I'm so excited. No, it's 1 mana, though, if you draw 3 or more, which is like just like a regular turn for you, Phil.
Yeah, one mana.
I'm not sure.
I think how much damage they'll do will be a little variable, right? But I imagine in a typical commander game, you're going to find a window to cast this for 1, right? I'm having a hard time thinking of a commander game I've played where someone didn't draw 3 cards at some point. And then if this is dealing 10, 15 damage for 1 mana, that's kind of insane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean,
and then if you copy it,
that's it. This card is, it gives me nightmares.
I think it would just be better to copy a big score. I don't know, 15 damage, sure.
I mean,
if the opponent has drawn 15 cards... I don't know if that's enough.
It's like the ultimate gotcha. It's like you draw like 20 cards or something, and like, oh, I'm so ahead, you guys. And I'm just like,
okay. But I just drew 20 cards.
Y'all are definitely.
It's great.
I see Tomer's train of thought, though, because I did not think Sword of War and Peace was good until I played it.
I never beat that guy.
And then,
but Seth and Phil specifically make these cards
their favorite card
really
is like
good.
Reliquary Tower.
That card just
bothers
me. Yeah.
True. Yeah. Okay. So the problem is, I think that I don't know how many times you really draw 3 cards. It's usually like, hey, I make this token and I sacrifice this, and when it sacrifices it, it reveals cards and do the, like, there's a lot of triggers, but actually explicitly drawing cards, like Risen Reef doesn't draw cards.
I cast a lot of Seagate Restoration, so it
you
okay.
You just draw 3 in a turn, right?
Yeah,
like,
if it's
you draw for
Seagate
your turn, and then you have
yeah.
to draw 2 more if it's your turn.
I guess that's true. It doesn't have to be 3 at
happen.
Once.
Yeah, yeah.
Just 3 during,
I would die to this.
Yeah,
of course.
It's just like, if as long as you drew 2 extra cards on your turn, that's 3. Boom. Now I cast for 1.
But then you also need to have more than like 5 cards in it. Like, it's kind of just good in the one time every few games where you actually.
That's why it's going to be memorable.
It's probably more funny.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, true. Sure, I'm not going to. That is true. If
so
it works,
excited.
It's glorious.
There will be a game eventually where I see a restoration with like 10 cards and go up to 20 cards and I just die for 1 mana. So like that situation will happen. It will happen often, but I'm sure it will happen eventually. And I'm not looking forward to it, but I probably deserve it after all the blowouts I've given Tomer, apparently, that he remembers so well.
I'll write down Seth on it. I'll alter it. I'll just write Seth on it.
You say blowout. I just say memories.
Yeah, memories. I think they're good memories. I don't know if Tomer is.
I'm sure you do.
I wake up in a cold sweat some nights just thinking about, no, don't strip mine. I only have 1 land, Seth, please. You already commandeered my mana crypt, please.
Grim, what do you got for your last pick?
For my last pick, it's going to be Xenos Yagalvis. Now, this is a 5 cost from Final Fantasy. And, okay, first off, if you think about the lore of this character, the reason why his thing is my first friend, dude has an unhealthy and very toxic relationship with the main character, and he calls it friendship, but I call it, like, he is definitely a rival, right? Like, peak anime rival. And the main reason why all like I picked this card is because the backside. The front side gives -2/-2 to everything, but when a creature, the chosen creature leaves the battlefield, transforms Zenos. And that's when you get Shinryu Transcendent Rival. As this creature transforms, choose an opponent. And then Burning Chains, his mechanic, when the chosen player loses the game, you win the game. So I play this. This card is like probably no right in being in my flash decks, but I try to flash him in so many times to see. I've never gotten it to work, by the way. This has never won me anything. But the idea here is there's been times where I've gotten close, where somebody's getting attacked. I flash this in to try to benefit off of that player dying. Problem is, he also gives everything -2/-2. So like it kind of throws off the combat math. So I really need to make sure that this person is losing the game so that I can win the game. And that's the whole goal. And the hoops I have gone through to try to make this happen is many. And it never works. But it doesn't matter, because the main thing here is the memory that I know the day when I pull this off, it's going to pop. And like being able to play, if you have this as your commander, sure, you could do it easily because you have Deadly Rollick. You have all these things that you get these free spells, clear the way, easily can flip them over. But doing it in a deck where he is not the commander, it is very hard to win through Burning Chains. And that is a memory in itself. Y'all saw this too, because last stats episode for last season, this is in almost all my decks.
I think it did show up on your most played creature list. Yeah, somehow. Mm. I mean, I think this is a good one, because I think that all win cons are very memorable, especially ones that you don't see often. If it's Thassa's Oracle or a common one, then it's not very memorable. But I remember, like, Niatuk, our editor, winning with Door to Nothingness, this weird Door to Nothingness where he killed the whole table by untapping a deck. Things like that that you see very rarely, I think, are inherently, like, big moments, crazy stories, memorable moments. So I think this fits perfectly. Like, yeah, it might take you a lot of games to actually pull it off, but once you do, it is going to be a great moment.
Yeah, I think the fact that you have to work for it and it's so convoluted sometimes is just like what makes it so
it
good.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very exciting. The tension, because you see, like, I see the thing, you win the game, and that's like, it immediately adds tension to the game because it's like, oh no.
Oh, yeah.
And then you chose me. Oh no. That's foreboding.
let's move on to Phil. Phil, what do you got for your last choice?
Oh, no, this is a type of cast that I would have assumed that Krim mentioned this. Though the first card I'm going to mention is Misleading Signpost. It's a 3-mana rock with flash that when it enters during the declare attacker step, you may reselect which player or permanent's target creature is attacking. There's also Windshaper Planeta. It's an angel that allows you to, when it enters the battlefield during the declare attacker step, for each attacking creature, you may reselect which player or planeswalker it attacks. And then Portal Manipulator from Clue is when it enters during the declare attacker step, choose target player and any number of target attacking creatures their opponents control. Those creatures, wait, target attacking creatures their opponents controls. Those creatures are now attacking that player. My God, this text walk is they all do very similar things, but they are worded differently. I guess one reference all 1/1, and then the other one is just, I don't know, weird wording. But this one's a little like Settle the Wreckage, where it's a little like a clever fork, not as clever as Domineering Will, maybe, but it's like such a cool utility, and you rarely ever see it. I sometimes try them. I played them in the Ink Shield deck. I wanted to use this to attack myself so I can get somebody with Ink Shield, like the planetary thing. You know, it didn't work. I didn't draw it. But this is just a super, not broken at all. I don't think you can break this. I guess it, you could kill somebody with this, but in this case, somebody else would have gotten killed. This is just very fair magic, but very rare and super unique.
Yeah, I mean, Miscellaneous Signposts is one I've played the most. I don't think I've played the other ones, but that's another one that I've played. Because there's also a 3-mana Mana Rock with Flash, which is, like, yeah. Fine.
Oh, it's expensive now.
Is it expensive? Oh, now it is over $10.
Oh,
now. My God.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Jeez. I didn't realize it got so expensive. Oh, no. But it does lead to really funny moments. It's just, like, something people don't expect. And it's a little bit like, kind of, like, I guess, like, Ink Shield is not the worst comparison, where it's this, like, fog effect, but it adds in the tension of, like, damage being dealt on top of it. So, for such a simple, basic card of being a 3-mana Mana Rock, is actually, like, super fun.
I think it's actually, like, the huge thing about Ink Shield is, like, yes, if you don't get to cast it, you only have that mana out for Ink Shield, and you feel like you've done nothing. But this one is just like, okay, nobody attacked me. I'm just gonna I can just cast it as a mana rock, and it's like fine. Yeah. Okay, it costs one extra, I guess, to ramp. But who cares? Like the payoff is worth the risk, you know. So for how much the extra cost is. So I really like this one. It's a very just a funny card, and the requirements to do it is not that much.
I think this is the mana rock that I play the most, simply for the tricky moments, but the amount of games where I just sit there and I'm like, do I actually play this as a mana rock?
He's just playing as a mana rock.
I think it's correct just to run it out, but even though it feels bad every time. But I think it is correct, but like, because you want to get that blowout with it. You want to make that moment. Like, you want the
story. Yeah. You don't need the mana anymore, I guess. Like, if it's like turn 9, it's like, I'm not going to cast it anymore, I guess.
Let's round things out with a card that leads to crazy moments. Probably the best card that we've talked about all day, or the most staple-y card. But it's one of those cards that leads to great stories and crazy moments, but you really don't want it to happen when you're the one casting the card. And that card is Gamble. Gamble, just 1-mana tutor. 1-mana sorcery speed. Search your library for a card. Put it in your hand. But then you have to discard a card at random and shuffle. And that's the part of the card that leads to the best moments. If someone casts a Vampiric Tutor, a Demonic Tutor, a Diabolic Tutor, and Lane Tutor, I'm checking my phone. I don't care. Search through your deck. Like, there's nothing for me to do. There's no reason for me to be engaged with the game while you're Demonic Tutoring, right? It doesn't matter. I can't tell what you're doing. There's no point to it. When someone casts a Gamble, though, I am all over that, because I am rooting for you to discard whatever card you just tutored up. And that does happen on occasion. And it's even funnier when it happens when you have 7 or 8 cards in your hand, because then you know mathematically that should not be happening. So Gamble, along with being one of the best red tutors, it's the only tutor in Magic that I actually think leads to crazy stories and awesome moments. And I think it's worth playing just because of that. Like, the risk of it makes it so much more satisfying to me than playing like a Demonic Tutor or something. But what do you guys think of Gamble?
Yeah. It's the only fun tutor. I guess there's similar effects, like the artifact Gamble or whatever. But this one's just...
And it's the perfect
so cheap. It's, you can gaslight yourself into thinking, well, it's just gotta play this. But then I have phases with this where I play this, and then I try this, and then I play this on turn 1 or something, and discard my land, and then I'm just mana screwed. It is very fun, though. And I think it's the fairest tutor of the good ones. I don't even know if it's good.
I don't really run that many tutors in my decks, personally, but like, if I did want to run more tutors, this would be high up there. And it's like one of those cards that I would always never run, because I always feel very unlucky with it. And I'm like, yes, very powerful card, but I just won't run it because I always get screw myself over with it. And that was the same thing that I had with Chaos Warp. Chaos Warp, objectively, a very good card. And I just avoided it because I always got unlucky with it. But now that's kind of like the fun. I've embraced the fun aspect of it. I'm just ruining myself sometimes. And that makes me appreciate Gamble more. Like, power level aside, as long as I realize, like, oh, it makes things more interesting that I can randomly get ruined.
It makes the card worse. It's worse that way. But it also leads to more interesting moments. I'm glad you brought up Chaos Warp, too, because I think those definitely deserve a mention, at least. Because as far as just, like...
Tibalt's Trickery as well.
Yeah, Tibalt's Trickery. As far as cards that you see all the time in a game of Commander, those lead to some very good moments and stories, too. Because you just, you never know. That's the fun of, like, the random effect. Anyway. I think that brings us to the end of our Commander Clash podcast of cards that lead to great moments and crazy stories. So thanks for watching, everyone. Thanks to our sponsors for supporting the show. And we'll be back next week to do it all again. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is a Crew signing out.